Welcome to the Manasquan School District Board of Education Combined Committee of the Whole Meeting and Regular Public Board of Education Meeting for August 14th, 2018. Called order, opening statement pursuant to NJSA 10:4-10. Notice this meeting has been provided by publication in the Asbury Park Press, the Co-Star, and posted in the Borough Hall of Manasquan and in the schools within the time limits prescribed by law. I ask you to please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Jesse's going to put the flag up soon.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Sandy, roll call, please.
Mr. Boulderman.
Here.
Mrs. Bassone.
Yes.
Mr. Catani.
Here.
Mrs. DePalma. Mr. Fiore.
Here.
Mr. Hobbiter.
Here.
Mr. Lofredo.
Here.
Mrs. McGarry.
Here.
Mr. Pellegrino.
Here.
Mr. Serino.
Here.
Mr. Vitale.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Our mission statement, Manasquan School District empowers all students by providing a safe, healthy, and inclusive environment where continual growth, perseverance, and rigorous academic standards are balanced with extensive extracurricular opportunities and a rich tradition through a partnership with our community. Our statement to the public, oftentimes it may appear to members of our audience, the Board of Education takes action with very little comment and in many cases by a unanimous vote. Before a matter is placed on the agenda at a public meeting, the administration has thoroughly reviewed the matter with the superintendent of schools. If the superintendent of schools is satisfied the matter is ready to be presented to the Board of Education, it is then placed on the agenda at the next committee of the whole meeting. The members of the board work with the administration and the superintendent of schools to ensure that they fully understand the matter. After the committee of the whole approves the matter, it is placed on the agenda for action at a public meeting. In rare instances, matters are presented to the Board of Education for discussion at the same meeting that final action may be taken. Acceptance of minutes. We recommend an acceptance and approval of the minutes of the combined committee of the whole and regular public meeting and closed executive session of July 17th, 2018. Executive session minutes will be withheld from disclosure until such a time as the reason for discussing and acting on a matter in closed executive session no longer exists. Do we have a motion to accept the minutes?
Yes.
Ms. Bassone, seconded by Mr. Serino. Any question on the minutes? Sandy.
Mr. Boulderman.
Yes.
Mrs. Bassone.
Yes.
Mr. Catani.
Yes.
Mr. Fiore.
Yes.
Mr. Hobbiter.
Abstain.
Mr. Lofredo.
Yes.
Mrs. McGarry.
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino.
Yes.
Mr. Serino.
Yes.
Mr. Vitale.
Yes.
Carried.
Number seven, our student board representative report. Since we don't have any student board representatives, there will be no report. Number eight, presentations. And for that, I will turn it over to Dr. Cajun.
We have three presentations tonight. We have Mr. Clayton, our coordinator of security, will be focusing on a new security plan. That will be followed up by our building principal from Manasquan High School, Mr. Coppola, will focus on policy 5533 and the letter you all got home in Friday packet in regards to vaping in schools, as well as just a little look at our security that we have for our, as Tim will focus on as well, our new rotating and drop schedule and our one lunch period. And then we'll have Joe McDermott filling in tonight for Rob Notley, who will speak about the progress that we have on our construction project at the high school and the elementary school. And with that, Mr. Clayton.
Thank you. Good evening. Real quick, this is going to be a real short presentation. Basically, it's from the Secret Service put out an operational guide on preventing target school violence. And it is just another step of something we already do. And we're just formalizing what we're going to call a threat assessment team. And it's a recommendation based on the Secret Service through the Department of Homeland Security. And it's something that I would like to, myself and Liz Rutter would like to introduce to the school this year and start off beginning of the school year with this. And it would be available, obviously, to both schools. Real quick, what basically we talk about is the physical security. We have this now. We have our staff at the point of entry. We're going to have retired police officers at the point of entry. We have the secured vestibule. The Board of Education put those in. We have the visitor identification procedure. We have our district-wide emergency plan. We have our school crisis plan. We talked about this last year after the Parkland shooting, where we decided to get together a little bit more with mental health and security to talk about kids that could be at risk. What this plan does, based off the Secret Service model, would be actually formalize it to be more of a threat assessment. And there's a primary and secondary people, but it's a team based of anybody with behavioral concerns. It's not just I heard so-and-so made a threat, I told the teacher I'm gonna kill you. That would be the immediate notification, that would be notification to the police, that would be involving the police department. These are other behaviors that we would be concerned with, and we wanna like see what kind of risk they pose to themselves or to the school community. Primary members would be school administrators, the high school principal, the MES principal, the mental health professionals would also be on the team, and then the school security. So we'd all get together, we would meet monthly, we would just talk about high-risk students, any issues. If something happened, an incident, or a mandatory notification to the police department, that's where we'd bring in the secondary member. Say we have a student who that Snapchat himself holding a gun in a threatening manner. We get notified about this. That's where we would follow up with this. We would get a teacher that they have a good relationship with, or guidance counselor, nurse, and then that would be the mandatory notification. We'd have a police officer on this as well. And with those resources together, we'd be able to look at their grades. Have their grades been dropping? Has their attendance been? There's all these things that go into this threat assessment to see what kind of services we could provide to that student to minimize any harm to themselves or others. The immediate intervention is just the immediate intervention would be the violence, possession of a weapon, the bullying, or through our HIT program, that would be considered violence or any other criminal behavior. That would be immediate intervention. But we want to look at other things, the decline in performance, increased absenteeism, changes in behavior, appearance, or drug or alcohol use. We want to be able to look at these things to really get ahead of it, so it doesn't go any further for the student, the decline. And that's where we think we would separate us from just the initial threat. And these are the areas. I think I skipped almost. No, these are the areas that we would be looking into under the threat assessment. It's just a snapshot. Do they have access to weapons? That's where we get the police department involved under firearms registry. Do they show any interest? We look at their talk to their friends about their social media, and really come up with a comprehensive plan to work on the mental health of the student. I know we had a couple incidents last year where these kind of things were taken in. Again, it just formalizes it, puts it all in one place, and then we follow up and we stay with the student until we feel comfortable that the student is no longer a threat to the school. On top of that, with this physical security, we have a few retired police officers coming on board, and part of that is going to be there on the floor for the unit lunch. So we maintain a high visibility during the unit lunch at the high school this year to make sure everything goes well. We don't anticipate any problems. We expect it to be well controlled and well supervised. And that was my presentation on my initial thought of the threat assessment team.
All right, so I have a couple questions for you.
Okay.
The threat assessment concept was brought to me by Tim, and we were talking about the whole idea about we have an INRS program or committee that meets to take a look at children who are struggling academically as well as who are struggling in the classroom, but nothing to view students psychologically who might be having some difficulties. And I think the concepts that you earmarked in the presentation are things that have to be identifiers that we can utilize to see if students are struggling. And with that, and with the committee that you put together, how many times a year do you anticipate meeting?
We anticipate to meet monthly, as long as there's not an immediate threat. If there was an immediate threat, we would meet, as needed for that individual threat. But I would say monthly. We also want to set up, and I spoke with, I did speak with the chief of police about it. I also spoke with our tech department about it today, about somehow coming up with an anonymous reporting for students or parents or anyone, whether it be an anonymous reporting so we could follow up if someone feels they're friend is going down the wrong path, hanging with different kids, they're changing their appearance, their grades are slipping, you know, that would be something we'd be concerned about, or that could report it to us anonymously where we can start doing a little background investigation on that student. It may not be a physical threat to the school itself or to the student body, but possibly to themselves. And it's just, like I said, it's a formalized team where if we get notified of anything, we can certainly follow up.
And I think it's a proactive way of making sure that all our students are cared for and we don't eventually have that crisis.
And it was basically, what the Secret Service did is they studied all these school violence throughout, you know, the last 20, 30 years, and they came up with these indicators, these red flag indicators that if somebody picked up on it, we would be able to maybe prevent something before it ever got too far down the road. And that's basically using their model, their indicators, based on all their research and study, and they're presenting it to the schools, again, through the Department of Homeland Security for us to, you know, try to get better.
Now, just recently, you and I went to that crisis management meeting, I'll call it.
Yes, we did.
And what was your take on that? You could explain that to the board.
Well, my take on it was, it was basically, the Bob County Prosecutor discussed this model itself. And this model is not to exclude us from a mandatory notification or a notification to a police agency at all. They used an example where a student threatened a teacher. They got to an argument, a student with special needs. He told the teacher he was going to kill her. He left. They did a threat assessment, and they felt the student was not a threat. Well, they never notified the police department. Fast forward 3 months, it turned out the student was, you know, continuing a threatening behavior, doing things over social media. And so they got a 3-month delay to starting. That wouldn't be part of us at all. But that was the threat assessment. This is the direction that most schools are going to. But it does not relieve us of the mandatory notification or any notification to the police department. They want to have partnerships with our agency, and we did. I spoke with the chief again this week on this.
And with the mapping that we had just seen for $889, what do you think about that? Because personally, I think it's something that maybe we should look into.
Yeah, it was basically the mapping on it. Are you familiar with it at all?
No.
The mapping was, it's what the United States uses right now, the military mapping, and they geocode and triangulate the building. So they put everything almost like a battleship, you know, A3 to B4, meet me here. And you'll have this map that's on your phone. So basically, you don't have to know where room 101 is. You just need to know if someone says, hey, this is the zone. And it's really inexpensive. It's
$889.
Yeah, they're asking for each school. The Mount County Sheriff's Department is asking for each school to have their schools mapped. And
we need 4 maps.
Possibly. Kind of hoping they would say the IA building is part of the high school, and the weight room would be part of the elementary school as one map. But that's something we'd have to speak to the vendor about. But anything like that enhances police response to limit, you know, to make it communication a lot more clear is obviously any benefit.
Any questions about that? Because I think it's something that we're going to move forward with.
I think it's wonderful.
All right.
Less confusing.
One quick question, Mr. Clayton. You answered one of them with the reporting and how it could be reported in, whether it was anonymous or,
right,
you know, through that. But as far as how it's viewed, the level of the threat or what could be going on, I know you said a monthly meeting. How would it be communicated in a confidential way to various teachers that maybe a student had, that if there was something to possibly look out for? When are we communicating that, I guess?
Well, I would think any time that we felt there was some type of threat that we would notify the teacher.
So, and again, high school, that would be plural, so, you know, we're finding out what their schedule is, and are we notifying all their teachers? I guess, what does that look like?
I mean, that would be an administrative, I'm not
100%. I'm not comfortable with that, in other words, all the teachers. But I think that if it came to the point where we were worried about that child, that they have to let all the teachers know, then that child would have to come down and get some type of servicing with us and the parents.
So the child is aware
in
some capacity that
Meet with the team.
Yeah, we would, I mean, the child himself, we would interview the child. That's part of the process.
So is that step one?
Well, one notification, if we were notified of something, then we would do the background, the information. We have attendance grades. We would be able to speak to their friends, their teachers, if needed. It would basically be a formalized investigation into the student.
Okay.
And we'd also interview the student. We would want to include the teacher they have a good relationship with, or a coach, or someone, or a guidance counselor.
Sure.
And make it, you know, it's not an interrogation, it's truly just sitting down and interviewing the child, make sure they're okay physically and mentally.
Got it.
But it's just, and it depends what the threat is. I mean, we have a video of a, and this happened last year, a video of a Snapchat of a student holding a liquor bottle and a gun. He Snapchatted it out. One of the students sent it to me.
Yep.
I contacted the police, it happened on Saturday. I contacted the police and they want to know who the student is. Well, the student didn't want to be, and it turned into like, well, so we want to kind of make it so there's kind of, I eventually spoke to the student's parents and got permission to give them their name, but we kind of want to be able to have that anonymous report as well.
Sure.
It was clear as day what the Snapchat was. So,
I like everything you said, but is this only, if I'm understanding correctly, only for anticipating upcoming crime, or is, you went on the mental health path that you,
right.
Like just say a student said, my friend is very depressed and she or he is crying every day. Would you intervene in that way as well to get them to therapy or help, or is it just strictly to prevent upcoming anticipated
right.
crime or going down?
And I understand what you're saying, because I'm calling it a threat assessment team. It could be a behavioral assessment team.
Right. So it can be
used. We can
call
it anything we want. But yes, we
but
follow
the,
it. We have the voluntary random drug testing program.
Right, but the reporting system that you said, if somebody felt that, like
yes.
you said, if they're missing school or they're crying all the time or they had
yes.
a death in their family, that can be reported
that
as well.
That would be something we would want reported. And that would be something we would review and follow up on. And it's something we do already. I work closely with Ms. Rutter and Ms. Musco regarding students' behavior in our school and keep an eye out for them. If I see anything different, you know, I bring it back to them. And it's all part of the counseling session. This would be the same thing. That would be part of it. It would be bullying. It would be
right.
some alcohol use. Like if we had a student that, you know, came up
suddenly started
yeah,
drinking.
They,
yeah,
they're part of the Be Proud program and they failed the test.
Right. I would just think that we would somehow have to make that known to the kids that it's for all of those types of things, not just the gun and the alcohol bottle. The whole,
it's for their mental health.
Okay, good.
It's still all of it, but it kind of formalizes what we already do. So
excellent.
where our social services are dealing with them, we could also speak to an administrator and to one of the security, so we can keep an eye out.
Gotcha.
You know, if we see someone, and again, it's recommendations based on the Secret Service for all those things.
Okay.
But
thank
yes,
you.
We could. It doesn't even have to be cultural. This is in its infancy. It's something I approached Dr. Cajun on this week or last week, and something I spoke with Ms. Rutter about possibly co-chairing it with me, where we both can drive the meetings.
Gotcha. Thank you.
And we're just going to touch on 5533, and as you lead into that, that's that smoking policy, which focuses on a $250 fine.
First offense.
That the board received in the prior. And Terry, you have a question?
Asked and answered. I'm good.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, it's a Board of Health violation, and other schools are starting to do it, but we had so many issues with the vapes.
Wait, I missed the first part. What?
Basically.
$250 fine, and you weren't done, and he didn't start, so I thought I missed.
No, basically, what I was, we had so many kids actually actively vaping in school.
With the new Juuls, the ones
with
that
the
look
Juuls,
like
the Juuls we showed at that
okay.
one meeting.
Yeah.
And we had so many, and we're not the only one that has this problem. We're just addressing it. We had that issue, so we're kind of separating possessing it in school and actually using it in school.
Okay.
And it's basically just separating them. So if you use it in school, it's a health code violation. And first offense is $250, second offense is $500, third offense is $1,000.
Is that to pay the school or the state?
No, that's paid to the municipal court.
Oh.
But it's a state health code violation.
Okay.
And it's something some other schools are going to address, and it's, I thought it was a pretty good idea.
Good.
They don't get arrested for that, though, right?
They don't get arrested.
Okay.
It's a health code violation.
Okay.
Thanks.
Rick?
I put my suit on tonight and Mr. Clayton just
told
me.
Yeah.
And thank you for putting your suit on, because I have mine on.
I just wanted to thank Mr. Clayton for kind of formalizing this committee. You know, it's interesting, Mrs. Bassone, you brought up a really good question, and I just wanted to expand on a little bit. You know, because of our history, one of the things that's in our DNA is to be ultra diligent when it comes to any student that we may see would be in crisis. And crisis, there's a lot of different things that we talk about. It could be academic performance, could be things at home, could be the mental health component. And you know, as a Board of Education, you've all been very supportive for giving us the resources we need to be proactive in the way that we address these things. And you know, we work very closely together, the administration, our counselors, the guidance counselors, our SAC, our social worker, to try to address these issues in a proactive way. And I really give Mr. Clayton a lot of credit, because the way to, you know, when you formulate a committee like this, it's very easy just to look at the discipline component and just to say, okay, well, you know, this is a person on our radar, and this is these are the punitive steps we have to take. We don't do that. You know, a lot of the things that we do when we come together and sit at the table, it's problem solving, and it's always student centered. And I give you a lot of credit for you know, being a part of and leading part of it. But it is something that we're, you know, obviously, you know, we're proud of what we do here. We're proud of that approach. One of the things that I'm here to talk about is a letter that's going out between the freshman packets this week, and we'll also send out to our upperclassmen. And that's the letter that is signed by myself, Mr. Brantley and Mr. Reed, just about, you know, the concerns that we have about vaping. We did a lot of discussions with other principals in other buildings in Monmouth County and Ocean County, and we're all having the same problem. Seeing how, you know, readily available some of these vapes are, and where these kids are getting them and everything else, and you know, we wanted to take proactive steps in moving forward. Just kind of following up with what Mr. Clayton said, there's more teeth in this now in terms of the policy that we're talking about here with the New Jersey Smoke-Free Air Act. The $250 fine is something that we're going to talk to the kids about. This letter is going to go home. Obviously, we want to raise parents' awareness. We are also going to talk to Lee Busco to get something together in the fall. Parent program, where we invite parents in to educate them. We have parents that call us and ask us questions too, in terms of what they find and what they see and what we're seeing. So, you know, we're here to be a resource for our parents. We're here to partner with them, and I really think the education is a big part of it. So we will be having something in the fall where we will be inviting parents in to kind of talk about these things and get some answers. But the letter that is going home, and again, this is a proactive step that we're taking to address a problem with our new schedule and with open lunch and the freedom that we're giving our students, which is a good thing. But we want to just be clear about what our expectations are. And you know, it's like dealing with technology a lot of times. We write policies about, you know, cell phones or just a million different other things. And a lot of times our policies don't keep up with, they don't keep up with the technology. The technology gets to be more, you know, prominent and whatever else. And we're finding the same thing as this vaping, I won't say epidemic, but as this vaping situation is evolving or growing, we have to stay on top of it. And our policies and our procedures and the way that we deal with it have to change as well. So we feel that this is a proactive step. Again, we're going to go right to the handbook, right through the progressive discipline as we go. You know, we have very diligent staff here. We have very diligent security people, and you know, we just want to send this out and make a point of emphasis for our parents moving forward. So I understand everybody got this in their packet for today. So if there's any questions, you know, feel free to ask. But we will be highlighting this again in the back to school packets. We'll be talking about freshman orientation, and when we have class meetings our first week, this will be something that we'll be focused on as well. So just want to share that with you. And also want to invite everybody, if you have some time, next week, next Wednesday and Thursday, we have our freshman orientation on the 22nd and 23rd. First night we have our Be Proud program, the presentation for our freshmen. We'll also be handing out our devices, our laptops to the kids. And then the second night, we'll have a barbecue out here, and then we bring everyone into the gym and that's where we'll have our club set up so we can introduce students to staff members, and we can expose them to all the different clubs that we have, get them involved, and you know, kind of hit the ground running. So that's our unofficial, official opening.
The other thing is, I have you and Tim here this evening, I'd like to sort of talk about, is we did it on a small scale last year, and I assume we're going to do it on a larger scale, our locker searches that we did, and make that more of a routine, and put that in the handbook so it's there. I know we handed out the policy last year to students. This year it's in the handbook. It sort of formalizes it for us.
And we send out notification to parents so that, and students know, that's another thing we went over last year. We'll go over class meetings. We'll have those periodical random searches that we, you know, that we'll go through.
And how many do you feel we can have this year, you think?
I think once a month is reasonable. More frequently than that, we can do that as well. I mean, it's, you know, it's just a matter of getting some administrators together and security people doing what we need to do.
And we also started with our Be Proud voluntary random drug testing last year, and that we did, and we will continue with this year. But our goal is not to do a plethora of testing. I believe as we speak, I'm looking at Barbara and Leslie, the number of people we have in the program, I was going to say 31, but I think it's larger than that.
I think it's 42-ish,
42, 40, 45. Okay, and I would like to do several a month. As I said, I don't want to go over the top with it, but I know that we are doing that.
And we'll, we can report out on our numbers after freshman orientation as well.
Good. Thank you. You had a question,
Mr. Cole, how do you determine the randomness of locker searching, and do you keep track? Like, if you did locker 155, would you keep track and just say it was nothing in it? Would you? How do you determine the randomness, like the lottery ball, similar to the drug testing? And do you just, how do you?
It's a randomized program that we do through Excel. If you want to speak to.
Yeah, what I do is, it's basically a neutral plan, we call it. It's very similar on a DWI checkpoint. It's got to be very neutral. How we do it in school here is, I'll have it all laid out before the kids even come to school, so I don't even know who's. We break down the locker, the hallways, break down the days of the week, and break down the locker banks, and then the locker numbers in those banks. So, and then it's a random generate program in Excel, and what it'll do is it'll tell me, like, the third week of September on the fourth day, hallway A, which we designate lockers, and that gives me a block of 25 lockers, and that's all done before the students even come in. So it's a neutral plan. Once I generate all the random numbers, and then I provide them to the administrative office, and they put them in a file, and then we know on this date we have a locker search, you know, random locker search program. They'll pull the file and go to those lockers and do those lockers.
Okay, so you keep track of that, so you wouldn't.
You could, depending on how it goes, you could get your locker checked twice. Retire, you can get your locker checked because it's random.
But I meant, just for the fairness of the students, that you wouldn't pick number 155.
We don't physically go around and say this one.
Right, that's what I meant. How are you getting to those numbers?
The program, put in, like, if there's 100 lockers in that hallway, I'll put in, ask for 25 random numbers between this number and that number, and it gives me 25 numbers.
All right. I just meant for fairness of the student to
not very neutral,
get picked
very
four
fair.
Times in 2 months or something. You know, how did you get those numbers?
As I told Dr. Cajun when I put this out, I'll do it and I'll put my 32 years of integrity on the line.
Oh, no, I wasn't questioning that.
I'm just saying, if anyone questioned it, I'll put it on the line that we singled no one out.
Right, that's what I meant, just so nobody can come back and say, you picked my kid.
And I'm not saying that can't happen.
Right. But the frequency of it was my concern.
The frequency of it, I think once a month is a very good number.
Okay.
And it's not just for looking, we're not looking for contraband as much as, you know, we have food, we have Paul Cassidy left in there, we have all these things.
You'd be surprised what maybe you wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I mean, we had you know, something seeping out of a locker last year where we had to open up the lockers to find out what was.
And what was it?
Somebody left a drink upside down.
Oh. Yeah.
So.
Okay.
But yes, it's a very neutral plan.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Charles. I really appreciate you doing
this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now from New Road Construction, pinch hitting, Rob Notley is Joe McDermott.
Good evening, thank you. Rob is out the other day with his family. He's up in Canada right now.
So unfortunately, I wasn't able to put it together with a PowerPoint presentation that he often shows you. But this way, if I can give you updates on the four major projects that we're currently doing, and if you have any questions, you know, I can help answer those. I was going to start with the at the elementary school, the parking lot, and the backfield project. That is with the doorway construction. It's proceeding very nicely. So in the parking lot, so you understand the drainage piping and the structures for that drainage are complete. The curbs and sidewalk are complete, including the county road. The subgrade is complete. They paved it today. They did both courses. They did the base level, and then they also did the wearing course that they're currently just finishing up now. And they offered to come across and patch in your administration parking lot. There was some potholes in that area, so they cut that out and they're patching that as well, just as an extra, which on it in themselves. So you always like free at work. The lines are going to be put on the parking lot tomorrow and Friday, and then they're on schedule to turn over the parking lot next week. So it'll be back to being used again, which is a little early for them, which is good. In the backfield, the retaining wall is finished all around the playground structure. They started the playground equipment. They've begun to install the footings and the posts, so I would say they're maybe 40% done on that. The drainage underneath of that structure is also complete. So that's been put in. The sod is set to be delivered the 25th of August. Only takes about 2 days to put it down. The type of sod that we're going is, when they submitted it, so you know, they offered to do 100% bluegrass as opposed to a rye or a perennial mix. So you'll just get a better feel. It'll be very similar to your football field now as far as the quality of the grass you get. It was just easier for them to buy it as a solid bluegrass than to find the type of mix, which is often like, you know, a fast mix that kind of, it sets, but then when the ryegrass kind of dies out of it, you know, you end up with different blade sizes, so you have a very, you know, consistent feel. So that should be done well. The fences and the baseball fields have started, but they're all, everything in that field is on task right now to be done in 2 weeks, so by the end of August. So you have the backfield. Now, they won't be able to play on the backfield when the sod first gets set in. It has to have a chance to actually root and set, so they're going to temporarily fence off those areas, but the playground will be available. We'll be playing that, the macadam that you have that the children play on back there, that'll be available as well. So, all right, did you have any questions about that particular project or the parking lot? All right, the next project I'll talk about is the addition itself. Here in the high school, the locker room and the gym work is set to be turned over, obviously complete by the end of August, but they are on, you know, high speed for the gym. We have to have that cleaned and ready for this freshman orientation that we have on the 22nd, 23rd. So all the material will be pushed out of there. The air conditioning units in that area have been turned on, the new ones, so they're up and they're started. They just have to be balanced, but that can occur at any time after hours. The elevator is set to be installed next week. All of it is here. It's currently stored in what used to be the health room downstairs. So it'll go in. The brick and cast stone is ongoing, as you can see in the front of the building. The headers begin to go in. That's about 2 weeks to be complete before they finish the front, the little piece, and then around the back. Site work is also set for the end of August in the front of the building, hoping to have the sidewalk and at least to the point where they've hydro-seeded the grass in front of what would be the new addition, so they can pull out of that area. And then as quickly as possible, the Kappa Construction's goal is to get out of the front of the building and take that fence down at the front of the building. So, you know, depending on how fast he can get everything seated and kind of put back together, the idea is that they can then work from the lower entrance and work their way from like the admin parking lot in for like casework and that kind of stuff and interior finishes. And then that way it starts to grow, it starts to look nice again in the front for you. They're on track also to be, like I said, done in those gym areas, that kind of thing. But overall, their time schedule is set. They have to December by contract. They're pushing to be done right after Thanksgiving, currently, and then moving into the punch list phase during the month of December. So they're doing well with that. They're currently doing inspections on the inside of the building for electrical, plumbing, roughing. One side of the drywall has been installed on the entire first floor and part of the second floor. So now we have steel studding, framing, and once they have the inspections, they can begin to insulate as they seal the building up. And you're going to see the mansard roof start, the framing is supposed to start next week. So they begin to build the trusses for that and place them up on the roof as well, because the EPDM roof has been completed on top of the school as well. All right.
When they are no longer occupying the front of the horseshoe, where do they plan on parking?
Well, no, I mean, their plan is to get the portion that is in front of the addition. that section of grass where the tree is.
So they're still going to be in front of the horseshoe?
They'll still be in the lay down area for the time being, because they still need areas to move material in and out of. But, you know, their goal was to try to get out of that area as quick as possible. But I think that in reality, they're going to still need somewhere to kind of transition from and move.
Okay.
It's going to be odds and ends stuff, concrete work they're going to have to do, things like that. I think they'll still probably be in that front horseshoe lay down. I would think, from what I've seen on their schedule, probably it's about October.
Okay.
Or towards the end of October before they can start to pull out of that area. Anyway, and they're required by contract to restore.
Yeah,
so they pull everything back out, pull all the stone back out they placed, and then they retopsoil it, fix the irrigation system through there. And I think they have to plant like one or two trees on one side. So.
Don't we have a sprinkler system in front of that area that they're going to seed? Do we have a sprinkler system?
Yes. Yeah, they're in front of the east, you know, I call it the east wall, but the addition itself, there was a sprinkler system there. And it was demoed out as we had to do your, you know, construction and dig down. They're required to put it back.
Okay, now, having said that, why can't I sod that?
It could be sod. You know, it wouldn't be an issue of not sodding it. I mean, they got work down below where they have to do the pavement driveway and redo that as well. So if it's an issue of getting it sodded, you know, we just have to kind of bring it up.
Only because then it would look finished right away.
Yeah.
And people would stay off it because they're going to need it to get roots as well.
Yeah, and it's not a very large area.
Right. That's right. So what do you think?
I agree.
Okay.
So if you put 6-foot sections, I open that up to the board. What do you think?
Yeah.
Can you put sod down in October, November?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wouldn't be a problem. I think in reality that area, he's hoping to be out of that and kind of cleaned up in September, which is once he has the irrigation system in place and it's operational, yeah, then we can sod. It only needs about 2 weeks worth of being watered to kind of begin to root. And if it's anything like last year where it was warm till December, then it was like still growing. I think it'll be fine.
They have 6-foot rolls? 6-foot rolls of sod?
Yeah, like mats, they can do that. They can do full length rolls, or they can do 6-foot sections, or they can do small, like 2x2s.
I prefer the bigger we can get, because
yeah, you get a better stitch, you know, when you have bigger sections.
We good?
Good.
I'd like to investigate that.
Okay, we'll look. Yeah, well, I have Kappa kind of look at it, price it out, and give the credit for not doing the other work as well in exchange for it.
Awesome. Thanks, Joe.
All right, the alternative school. Just so you have an update on that, that's on track to be done in about 2 weeks. The drywall, the new HVAC, the exterior work, the sidewalk, the electrical, plumbing, rough, the paint, and the flooring are all done.
Now, when you say 2 weeks, give me a date. I mean, isn't that supposed to be done like the third week in August?
No, their contract was through August 31st, but he's on track to be finished and basically kind of out of the area within the next, say, 2 weeks. I think by the 28th, I think he said. But they do have Shoreland Construction has two doors that are for the bathroom, and they're set to be delivered on the 30th. So he's on the schedule with the township to have his final inspection for TCO on the 31st. He needs those two doors and those bathrooms before he can get that TCO.
All right, so the bottom line is going to be open for you September 1st.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, even if we have to do something temporary on those doors, if there's a delay in that, we'll
Yeah, we can. Yeah. That wouldn't stop us from getting a CA, or is it a CO?
On that building, it is actually, it'll be a TCO first, like a temporary certificate of occupancy,
right.
And it'll be a CO
okay.
at the end. Because you didn't occupy a student for more than 4 years, I think it was. And after that, when you go to actually occupy it again, you got to bring it all up to code for fire alarm and all that kind of stuff. So then you go for a CO instead of a CA.
Okay, good. Thanks, Joe.
All right, and then the last piece would be the media center renovation that I'm working with you for. That currently is ceiling grid is in, the paint's done, the VCT on the second floor mezzanine has been installed and finished. The carpet tile is supposed to be this Thursday and Friday in that space. It's all new carpet tile. The lights were delivered today and they'll begin to be installed tomorrow. And so the ceiling tile will also be at the end of this week. That'll go in for inspection as well for the up above ceiling. Your loose furniture is supposed to show up tomorrow, like chairs and this kind of material, desks. But your casework in that area doesn't show up until next week. So we have time to finish out the carpet, because it's going to be like a 2-day install for them. And then we could go ahead and start beginning to put the furniture and stuff in as well. So that, your technology on your side, I think you're doing work with Howard and Epson for some screens and that kind of stuff. That's also supposed to start this Friday into next week. So I'm on track with that in my schedule to be complete a week before the end of August. And that way we can get furniture moved back into the CST office or Director of Special mm-hmm. Services, I think you have over there, or
mm-hmm.
those offices, and that way they can get the space ready and books on the shelf, that kind of stuff before school starts. So it's going pretty good.
That's going great.
Right. So I believe that's all the pieces I have so far. Anybody else have any other questions? Or?
All right,
great.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. If there's no other question, that ends our presentations for this evening.
Brings us to the discussion items for August 14th, 2018. And for education, curriculum, and technology, I'll turn it over to Dr. Kate.
Sure. We have a number of transfer students that have transferred in since July. I think we're up to number 12. And then we have another one coming in next week, so it'll be 13. And one of the things that I have started to do, especially with the help of Mrs. Pollock, is, and Leslie and Barbara, is take a look at the students as they come in and see if there are any special needs associated with them. And if there are special needs associated with them, we question that. I mean, just because the student is going to apply to come, you doesn't mean that we're going to take them. And I sort of need your weigh in on this as well. It's a $7,000 number, but it's a $7,000 number that I have no problem taking as long as I feel that the student is a good fit here. But I don't want to take someone who I feel is not going to be successful. And in executive tonight, we'll talk to you about two students that Leslie and I and Margaret did take a look at coming in. And you know, at the end of the day, after our investigations, we feel that they can. I want to afford them the opportunity to be part of the Manasquan learning community, and we will do that. But transfer students now are becoming something that is happening more often. And when we first talked about lowering the rate for students to transfer to Manasquan, we did talk about hopefully one day having that be able to offset and help us with our tuition rate for the sending districts as well. And with that, we're very cognizant of that, and we're moving towards that. So, also, I think something that we have to talk about that's under education is, and I guess maybe you could argue that it's under building and grounds, but I see this as student, is field use. And in regards to, and I'm talking about the new field that's going to be constructed now at the softball, the cross field, the new synthetic field that we're looking at. I really think that we should take a look at developing some type of policy, rules and regulations, costs, if you may, on people who would be asking to utilize that field. And as we speak, it's being constructed for several reasons. And it's going to be up to the Board of Education to see how far you want to extend that use. So either tonight you can start the discussion if you want, or you know, you can start thinking about it. So in September we can have that discussion, because I think we have to have an answer by October 30th, because the field will be done by then. And one of the things that eventually I know is going to come to us will be a discussion once we figure out who we want to utilize it. Well, now we have an opportunity to use the field all day, every day, 24 hours. What about, we have a conduit being put in there. What about the concept of being in front of it and developing some type of policy for lighting? Because I'm sure that people who live in that area are going to be coming out to us and saying, well, now you have this beautiful field. We see all the people on it on the weekends. And, you know, we saw conduits go in. We're pretty smart about this. And we really want to be transparent. What are you talking about lights? And we should have a policy ready to put out. Mm-hmm. That's, from my perception, a good neighbor policy, to borrow somebody's term, with our neighbors, so that light doesn't infringe upon them. And
yes,
the lights that we
neighbor.
Are, hopefully the new lights shine down, not out, and not in people's windows. So that's just being realistic. So these are things I'd like you to start to think about, so we can talk about them. Questions at all about either one of those? Yeah.
Do we have a policy on the current fields?
Do we have in regards to field usage?
Field usage.
No, Mark, we do not.
So what we should have is a policy on the usage of all the ground.
I agree. I think that's great, especially since we have.
If we had one that's in existence now, I would expect.
Well, there's a process in place. I don't know if it's policy.
Right, we do have a process.
So maybe we need to formalize the process. There's definitely a process. I mean, people do use the fields.
Yeah.
Well, we use the word policy. So
no, I understand.
I'm fine with process.
I think
once you write a policy, we've got to follow it.
Correct.
Yeah, that's why I would like to write a policy, because I think that's going to make the community feel more secure.
Okay.
And
I agree.
And afford us the opportunity to say, no, it's not in policy.
Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, very well. Good. Okay. Looking at other things I have to talk about, I'm sure Jesse's going to focus on our one-to-ones, policy agenda items. The you can see the board self-evaluation update that'll be in now or executive.
That's actually just a reminder, if you haven't completed your board self-evaluation, to do so. We're at about the 50% mark, and we'd like to discuss that at the next board meeting.
Is that on the NJSBA website?
Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you.
It's they don't call it, they call it self-evaluation if you're looking for it. They don't say board evaluation. It just says self-evaluation.
5517.
I have to remember my password.
5517 student identification cards. It's going to be more of a need. We started last year, and I really think that students bought into the idea of utilizing their identification cards, especially now with the different turnstiles that would be in place in the school in regards to not so much tracking, but tracking. Knowing where the students are during the course of a school day, especially during the open lunch period. So in case a parent wants to contact Johnny, we know that he was in the media center, at least he swiped in there. As well as they'll be able to swipe into some doors at some times, especially at the elementary school I'm talking about, but that would be the fob. Over at the weight room, when we want them to go to the bathroom, they'll get a key fob to go, but that's a little different. Okay, so there's gonna be a need for students to have their ID cards next year, and students do a great job at that.
Dr. Cajun, so
yes.
A high school student will be able to swipe into the weight room, but they will not be able to swipe into the actual elementary school.
No, what we're gonna do is, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Casey, but don't. If we're utilizing the weight training facility, that person or weight training coach will have a card or a key fob to give the child if he wants to go use the bathroom in the elementary school.
Okay.
And this will be after hours when there aren't students in
Got
class.
It.
And they have a door to go in, because in order for us to get our CO for that facility, we needed to show the county superintendent that there was access to bathroom use within 300 yards.
Okay.
And we did that.
Got it.
Any questions about any other policies? If not, I'm going to go to finance and our receipt of extraordinary aid instead of the aid payment.
Thank you. Two board meetings ago, we discussed the fact that extraordinary aid for the 17-18 school year was still outstanding. We did receive our notice at the end of July. We're receiving $150,926, which is $926 more than we budgeted, but it is only 50.12% of what we requested. So all districts were prorated back. I imagine the state does this because they are fitting the allocations into the state budget for extraordinary aid, so we received just over 50% of what we applied for. So that was one outstanding piece regarding the 17-18 budget. Are there any questions about that? Next, under building and grounds, I just wanted to speak regarding the capital reserve replenishment for sod and turf. This morning at our president and vice president meeting, we had a conversation. It's really regarding pre-budget planning. And at this time, we're recommending that each year, the board, at the budget process time, deposit $75,000 into the capital reserve account. $50,000 will be allocated for turf replacement when it's needed, and $25,000 of the $75,000 will be designated for sod replacement for the athletic fields. In the vicinity, somewhere around the 11 to 13 year mark, we are going to have to replace the turf on the lower turf field. Right now, the cost to replace that turf is about $500,000. So if the district puts away $50,000 a year, at that point in time, we will have that money set aside. So it's really a savings plan so we can accomplish that goal.
And this emanated from a meeting that we had Lynn and I this morning with Landtech and Suburban Engineers, and that's where we got that number.
Yes, $500,000, and actually the gentleman, the project manager from Landtech, who was with that company just over 10 years, he said the projects that he worked on 11 years ago, he's now starting to do replacement turf for those projects. So he told us around 11 to 13 years, expect to have to replace the turf.
And we have sod on both sides of the street, so I think that it's only applicable for us to look at that and also some money for that.
I And just one other brief thing, I'd like to, yesterday regarding the phenomenal amount of rain that came down in the area and the district, I just would like to thank the facilities department, the technology department, and Mr. McDermott, who's sitting with us this evening, for all of their assistance yesterday. It was an extremely long day. Some of the members of the departments, I know we had some server issues. Mr. Place, very wisely chose to bring our server down, our network server down. That meant we were without phones and, we're without, a lot of things that we're used to during the day. We were hoping to prevent any damage as, the water was coming out of the sky. We did have some damage. We did need to replace, and I don't know, Mr. Place, if you're going to speak a little bit about this later, but we did need to do an emergency order for some parts that arrived today so we can, make sure that we're fully functioning. So thank you to everyone that played a part in that yesterday. It was quite an interesting day, I'll just say that.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Fire away. Regarding my superintendent's report and information items, I'm going to turn this over first to our report for our Director of Curriculum and Instruction. Barbara.
Okay, good evening. This is very brief. Over at the high school, our teachers have been coming in for the summer workshops to help transition. We've had two workshops so far. They've been very, very well received. One we're going to run on our first half day for the teachers who were due to work or vacation or family obligations were not able to attend. We have two more coming up at the end of August. So thank you for allowing us to do that. I think it's given the teachers a lot of confidence to start the new school year. For our early college program, we're going to have a table at the clubs and activities night for freshmen. Our two teachers who are going to start the program for the freshmen will be there, and we'll have a representative from Brookdale to speak with the students if they have any questions. For curriculum writing, we've had about 50 teachers working on curriculum this summer. Jesse gave you access to Canvas so that you could go on and look at that curriculum, and then hopefully we'll approve it all tonight. And the teachers did a great job on that. That's all I have.
Thank you. Now I want to turn it over to our Director of Technology and Human Resources, Mr. Place.
Yep, just to expand on what Lynn said yesterday, for the events of yesterday, we got notice, actually, I think Mr. McDermott called me at about 11:15 a.m. That we were in some trouble. I forget exactly what words he used. I do recall what words I used. I will not repeat them here. But we knew that, the water was kind of coming down the stairs into that area of the building. Because of that, obviously, if the water gets to any of the electrical equipment, it's going to, short out the electrical equipment. So one of the worst things that we can have happen to our data center is for it to lose power, right, without properly shutting things down, because that could cause a lot of problems. So we immediately, initiated shutting down lots of our equipment. It's a lot of different machines in the equipment. We did that relatively quickly. We notified staff, that get out, you're going to lose some work if you're not in there now. And we were able to do that, in time. As Lynn said, the water level did rise to a certain height where what it did was it did get into our lowest seated universal power supply units. So those in the racks, two were damaged. So we have two in each rack. The bottom two were damaged. We were able, with Lynn's help, to order replacement parts for that yesterday afternoon, and they actually did get here today. So we were able to get back to full capacity today. We were able to avert what could have been a worse situation.
Mr. Place, in November,
yes.
Everything's moving upstairs?
Yes, as soon as we can occupy the new building, all of that equipment will be up on the third floor in the new technology unit, and presumably less prone to flooding there.
Presumably.
Hopefully.
If we have flooding there, it's all over.
Yes, we'll have much bigger problems. Yeah, yeah. Other than that, you guys are among the first to use the new devices tonight that we have for our high school staff and students. We've been distributing them to teachers. We've been doing so, and we'll begin handing them out to students next week at freshman orientation, and then the following week for upperclassmen. So we're excited to give them that opportunity. That's it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now, regarding our report from our Director of School Counseling Services.
Hi, everyone. Okay. Okay, well, we have been busy in the school counseling office for sure this summer. schedules. We're working on balancing classes, getting schedules ready for distribution. I was speaking to Dr. Cajun before, my goal is to have Jesse do a Honeywell slash email send out to all the families, letting the students know that their schedules are available. Hopefully by the end of this week, early next week. Therefore, if they need to come in and make changes and you know make any adjustments, we're still available in the, for the next 2 weeks so that they come in presumably with their schedules set. So in terms of you know moving this to the new schedule, we've done a really good job of really kind of working towards you know the goal of making sure that the students get the classes that they're looking for, making sure that they the students who you know are transitioning from one schedule to another, especially our upperclassmen, have been able to get the options of the classes that they were looking to get. So hopefully within the next couple of days, the schedules will be out and the students will be you know lining up to come in as they always do at the end of August. A couple of things, I don't know whether or not you had seen them before. Dr. Cajun, I had given the, like the option two policies, a couple of documents I have copies of. A couple of things that we've been working on. The first is something that I'm really excited about. It's a dual enrollment agreement between us and Brookdale University, Brookdale Community College. We've had students in the past that have done courses called Fast Start. Fast Start is really essentially for a student who is looking to just take a class on their own. They decide they want to, you know, get take a college course, but it really hasn't been able to be formalized with us in the sense of giving the credits for the transcript.
Do they have this lesson?
I sent it to you last week. I do have copies of it.
Did I put that in the Friday packet?
Okay, yeah.
And then if you could define what option two is, the broad stroke of what option two
okay.
is.
Okay. So with the Brookdale dual enrollment program, though, the formalization of this program has really allowed students, for example, I had a student that came to me that said that they were really looking to take some college credits and do an early release from school. So in order to establish that, what we came up with from Brookdale was we're going to be able to allow students to leave our campus to take Brookdale classes as a senior. So for example, they have to have 120 credits. If they choose to leave after the community lunch period, after they've been here for the 4 hours of seat time that they need, they will then be able to go to Brookdale University, sign up for actually four classes, two in the fall and two in the spring. Those classes will equate to credits on our transcript as, you know, essentially pass-fail credits, but they will still have a Brookdale credit, a Brookdale transcript. So what that allows students to do is to really be able to spend a full, you know, considered a full day here, get their 4 hours, and then leave the campus to acquire Brookdale credits during their senior year. The difference between this and a Fast Start program, the Fast Start program allowed students to just take a class on their own, but it wasn't put on our transcript. So the students weren't getting credits for it in our building as well. So I'm excited about that. We already have a student who is taking advantage of this program. He is all signed up. He has his two classes in the fall, two in the spring. And therefore, once that is finalized, we'll have that, you know, that document up as well. One of the other programs, Dr. Cajun had mentioned, was option two. So option two is something that is very broad. You know, districts have a policy, but we wanted to streamline it. We get a lot of questions about option two. I've worked in districts where option two is very different in all different areas. Each school does it differently. So with the help of the building administration, Dr. Cajun, we went through basically what I have these two, so I don't know if you guys got that.
Option two is the concept that public schools are allowed to develop alternative settings and alternative pathways for children. Under option two is what we got last year, was in 2009, the state decided to mandate that we needed to offer students an option two for physical education. And they didn't tell us what, they just told us we had to. And with that, we've developed an option two that we handed out last year. And you also had a policy that we enacted last year for option two for physical education. And then what you're receiving now, I think, is the physical education piece.
So, Right, so for option two, really our purpose for enacting option two in this building is really for those students who are looking to opt out of physical education because they're either in an athletic sport, in school, outside of school, or half and half, and with the goal of picking up another course. So oftentimes we see students that come in, they say, you know, I'd really like to take another class, I'd really like to, down the line, maybe look to leave early to do a Brookdale type of class, and how are we going to accommodate these students? In doing so, you know, there's very specific things that we had to look at, you know, what grade level students. So what we determined was that there will be three paths that a student can take should they want to participate in option two. So the basic, I guess really the basic guidelines for our purposes would be that students in grades 10 through 12 are eligible for option two if they are participating in school sports, sports outside of school, and in school. So for example, if they train for soccer outside of school and they're on the soccer team, that would be considered path B. And then path C would be for your athletes who are looking in terms of you know, gymnasts, dancers, those types of things who are doing an activity year round. So with that being said, those students will then be able to opt out of physical education. They would be responsible for doing the health component of the physical education because the state does not exempt any of the students from doing that. They would be doing that on their own time, and then they would therefore be able to pick up another course in their schedule. So I've had a couple of students that have asked about it. Really, I think it depends on the student, on the type of student that wants to either, you know, gain more credits, take maybe another higher level course. So, you know, that is something that we were looking at. In terms of the documentation, the athletic director will be the person that's actually taking a look at, you know, if a student is saying that they are training outside of school, we need to make sure that that trainer, that coach has the right certifications. So they'll have to provide a letter and documentation to make sure that they are certified in the idea of, you know, making sure that their training will count. So it's definitely, you know, another option for students who are looking to, you know, take more academic rigorous courses. And
personalized learning.
Okay, and then do you have that one too?
Yes.
Okay, and the personalized learning was something that we took a look at seniors and moving towards the new transition of the schedule. There are students who had a very set specific goal on what they wanted to take, on making sure they were able to get the courses that they wanted. There are students, however, that are used to having some built-in time during their day that have been asking for that built-in time. So in order to accommodate their needs and really make it meaningful, what we came up with was personalized learning. A personalized learning period doesn't hold credits. However, it gives the students a time during the day, should they need it, to work on other assignments, to spend time with their teachers, you know, with you know, completing their work. Students, in order to have the personalized learning, have to be in good standing by having 120 credits, and they have to be going into their senior year as a senior student. So it's really only offered right now to students who are seniors who want that time in their schedule right now. The goal for me is to have the counselors start to feed into some of these personalized learning experience rotation times to really work on post-secondary planning with some of these students, whether it be, you know, working on goals for college application processes, post-secondary plans, to be able to have really another period of time built in, because again, moving to a new schedule, these students were the ones who were impacted probably the most with what their schedule and their day looks like. So the goal of personalized learning was to be able to build it in should each student have met requirements. So whereas in the past students had that time built in, now essentially once they hit 120 credits, if we know that they are a student in good standing that will be able to earn the 150, then we can turn around and say, okay, well now, you know, we can build this time in. It has to be signed off on by the building principal, because again, we want to make sure that a student who is in a personalized learning is not, you know, in jeopardy of not having the credits that they need for graduation. So that's our main focus. So
is that going to be offered, or is that more like they're coming to you with the request?
So, you know, we had spoken about it, you know, we had spoken about it a little bit for those students when we started scheduling before they left. And we said to them, you know, give us your list of classes. The counselors have been really busy working with the students coming in, so we're actually starting to schedule some of these students now into the personalized learning. And again, some of the students, once they realized what their schedule looked like and the options that they had, some of them said, no, I don't need that, or, you know, and again, it could be just one semester, or it could be for the year, depending. So we are scheduling students in there, and that's why we want to formalize it by putting it on, you know, in writing so that people understood exactly what it was. So.
Good.
Anything else?
And just in terms of INRS, I know we spoke about INRS training, the importance of the INRS committee as we move, you know, really towards looking at keeping, student behaviors and issues that we may have seen with students on how we can service them. We are going to start doing additional training across the street as well. Last year we moved to Frontline, which is an online platform for 504 and INRS. It's a wonderful platform, but it takes some getting used to. So we are going to do another training for both sides of the street to make sure that the training that we have, everybody gets. And that way, you know, when we're trying to transition plans over, you know, from either one school to another, or if we want to make sure that the students, their plans all look similar, and that we're able to make sure that we have very comprehensive INRS plans for the students. So that training will take place September 28th. Our teachers, I'm sorry.
Good.
That's it, yeah.
Before we conclude the discussion items, one of the things that I did want to discuss with the board is the concept of our students driving the vocational school. Well, I know Mr. Corporal has sent a letter home to all the vocational parents, and Rick, since you're here, I want you to weigh on this for me, because I don't know the answer to this question. I know you will. And in the first paragraph, he states that students are not allowed to drive to vocational school. And because of that, and Sandy, you can also tell me, we provide busing for each vocational school student to go to vocational school.
Yes, we do. And some parents waive that because their students do drive.
Okay. So students are driving to vocational school. Now, parents have been waiving that since forever?
Maybe the past six, seven years.
Sandy, if they waive it, does that mean that child gets dropped from the bus route and we don't have to pay that bill?
They fill
and
out
if they waive
paperwork,
it, it's
and
for
then
the whole
if
thing.
Down the
they
line
can't
they
pick and
want
choose,
it reassigned,
right?
Then they have to send me formal paperwork removing the waiver.
But what I mean is it, they can't drive sometimes and take the bus sometimes. It's either the bus or the drive.
Right.
If you drive,
if
you give
waiver
up and we save
they're
the money.
Removed from the route.
They take them off the route.
Okay.
Now, Rick, has there ever been a problem for a child driving through vocational school?
Nothing. Not in recent years, nothing that I can remember.
It's probably a parking issue, don't you think?
Parking issue for us?
Not for them, for the vocational school. They probably don't want all the cars there, right? Wouldn't
I think
that
it's more of a safety and attendance thing than a parking issue.
We haven't heard anything from the vocational school about them driving and it's a problem. We haven't had anything, you know, problems from them going from here to there, so.
Yeah, so I'm going to ask the board is just allow me the opportunity to call Mr. Corkle and find out why he put that in the first paragraph. For the last 7 years, we've been having parents waive the right to drive.
Small amount.
If they waive and we're saving the money, that's fine. But I personally, including my own son, when he got his license in March, is driving up there spending $77 worth of gas a week in tolls to go drive up there. And for what? If we're paying, which I didn't know that I could waive out, I wouldn't want us to pay the money, but I'm wondering, is a safety issue? What if they don't get to Voc? What if they don't get back to Voc? Like, the bus for Voc is to take them there and back. I really feel strongly
they
need to be
waive,
riding that bus.
If they don't waive the right, then it's supposed to be on the bus.
Correct.
That's it. And then do we send the different schools the list of students who waived and who are driving?
No. I don't.
See, it's never been an issue for me for the 4 years I've been here that no supers ever called me and said, you guys are driving here and they're not supposed to be. So it was just a surprise to me to see that that was in his way. So I will investigate it and I'll come back in September with an answer, okay? But thanks. With that, that's the end of the superintendent's report.
Do we have a motion to recommend approval and acceptance of the superintendent's report? Mr. Serino, second. Mr. Persona, any questions for the superintendent?
about his report.
No.
Sandy.
Mr. Balderman?
Yes.
Mrs. Bissell?
Yes.
Mr. Catani?
Yes.
Mr. Fiore?
Yes.
Mr. Hobbiter?
Yes.
Mr. Lofredo?
Yes.
Mrs. McGarry?
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino?
Yes.
Mr. Serino?
Yes.
Mr. Vitale?
Yes.
Carrie?
Mr. McDermott, I don't think there's going to be any more questions for New Road tonight, if you want, unless you wanted to stick around, because it's going to get real exciting. It's going to get real exciting pretty soon as we get to the crux of the presentation.
Happy.
You too.
Thank you.
That brings us to number 11, a public forum on agenda items. Time may be allocated for public comment at this meeting. Each speaker may be allowed a limited time or recognized by the presiding officer. In the event it appears the public comment portion of this meeting may exceed 45 minutes, the presiding officer may limit each statement made by a participant to 3 to 5 minutes in duration. Individuals wishing to address the board shall be recognized by the presiding officer, shall give their names, addresses, and the group, if any, that they represent. Although the board encourages public participation, it reserves the right through its presiding officer to terminate remarks to end or by an individual, not keeping with the conduct of a proper and efficient meeting. During the public participation portions of this meeting, the board will not respond to questions from the public involving employment, appointment, termination of employment, negotiations, terms and conditions of employment, evaluation of the performance of, promotion, or disciplining of any specific or prospective or current employee. This public forum is limited to your comment on items included in this agenda only, please. Would anyone from the public like to be heard? Seeing no one. That brings us to our Manasquan general items. Items 12 through 24. Does anyone need anything separated out 12 through 24? Do we have a motion for 12 through 24?
Yes.
Mr. Hobbiter, second. Mr. Lofredo, any questions on 12 through 24? Sandy.
Mr. Balderman?
Yes.
Mrs. Bissell?
Yes.
Mr. Catani?
Yes.
Mr. Hobbiter?
Yes.
Mr. Lofredo?
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino?
Yes.
Mr. Serino?
Yes.
Carrie?
And our Manasquan Sending District items 25 through 47. Does anyone need anything separated out? 25 to 47. Do we have a motion for 25 to 47?
Okay.
I'm sorry. Yes.
I read somewhere tonight the doctors that were being.
If there's a question, we can ask the question after we have a motion.
But I can't. But I need to know if it's in here now before I vote, because I work here and I have to abstain.
We are not.
Find it.
We are not now voting on personnel now.
Okay. Thank you.
Anybody here? 25 through 47. Back to the motion part. Mr. Fury, second. Mr. Vitale. Any questions? Sandy.
Mr. Balderman?
Yes.
Mrs. Bissell?
Yes.
Mr. Catani?
Yes.
Mr. Fury?
Yes.
Mr. Hobbiter?
Yes.
Mr. Lofredo?
Yes.
Mrs. McGarry?
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino?
Yes.
Mr. Serino?
Yes.
Mr. Vitale?
Yes.
Carrie?
That brings us to number 48, old and new business. Does anyone have any old and or new business that they would like to discuss? Seeing no one, that brings us to number 49, which is our second public forum in the evening on any items, agenda, or otherwise. Would anybody like from the public like to be heard? Seeing no one, that brings us to our executive session. Whereas the Senator Byron M. Baer Open Public Meetings Act, NJSA 10:4-6, the Act provides the Manasquan Board of Education hold an executive session from which the public is excluded to discuss matters that are confidential and or one of the 9 subject matters listed in 12B of the Act. Whereas it is recommended by the Superintendent of the Manasquan Board of Education go into executive session on this date in Manasquan, New Jersey to discuss matters that are permissible for discussion in executive session. Whereas the length of this executive session is estimated to be 30 minutes, after which the public meeting of the board shall reconvene and proceed with business. Whereas the board hereby declares its discussion of the following subjects will be made public at a time when the public's interest in disclosure is greater than any privacy or governmental interest being protected from disclosure. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the Manasquan Board of Education, the board shall go into an executive session to discuss the following items. Number 1, confidential matters per statute or court order, and that is in regards to a special education student matter and the tuition student matter. Number 4, collective bargaining, an MEA update, and an update on the grievance. And number 8, personnel matters which involve the hirings, resignations, and leaves of absence. Items discussed in executive session will result in board action when the board reconvenes to public session. Do we have a motion to go to executive session? Mr. Hobbiter, second. Mrs. McGarry, all those in favor?
Aye.
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 Anybody opposed? The ayes have it. We have a motion to reconvene to public session. Mr.
Sohn. Second, Mr. Waldman. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
The ayes have it. Brings us to number 51, Manasquan personnel. We need a motion to recommend approval of the elementary school personnel as per document 4. Mr. Boulderman, we have a second. Mr. Hoveter, any questions on document 4? Sandy.
Blue or yellow?
It's the Manasquan one, so that would be yellow.
I thought it was broken down by elementary.
Yellow.
Okay.
Mr. Boulderman.
Yes.
Mrs. Bassone.
Yes.
Mr. Catani.
Yes.
Mr. Hoveter.
Yes.
Mr. Lofredo.
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino.
Yes.
Mr. Serino.
Yes.
Carried.
That brings us to number 52, the Manasquan Sandy District's personnel. Recommend approval of the high school personnel as per document L. That would be the blue sheet. Do we have a motion for document L?
Tom, that's the one I need.
Yes. Not there. Mr. Serino, second. Mr. Hoveter. Any questions on document L? Sandy.
Mr. Boulderman.
Yes.
Mrs. Bassone.
Can I abstain from one question because there's no number on it, or do I have to abstain from the whole thing? There's one thing.
You can just tell us what you're abstaining from, the person's name.
The doctors, they're my bosses, so I can't vote on them.
Okay. So say their name.
Petrosini and Gonzalez. So I'll vote yes on the rest.
Perfect.
Mr. Catani.
Yes.
Mr. Fiore.
Yep.
Mr. Hoveter?
Yes.
Mr. Lofredo?
Yes.
Mrs. McGarry?
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino?
Yes.
Mr. Serino?
Yes.
Mr. Vitale?
Yes.
Carried.
Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Yes.
Mr. Serino, second. Mr. Hoveter?
Yeah.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All the rest?